Going Deep Podcast, we got Super Bowl champion Willie Colon.
What's going on, everybody?
This is Stephen Che. We've got a special guest in the house, former New York Jet quarterback Mark Sanchez, Willie's team at the fifth overall pick in the 2009 draft. Mark, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Not a Super Bowl champ, but an AFC championship participant.
Right. Two times. So it's great having you on the show. Obviously, Willie's teammate for several years with the New York Jets. He's actually told a couple stories about you specifically going into a preseason game, getting hurt. We'll get to that in a moment, but would love to. This is kind of broken over the last couple hours. Tyrod Taylor, as it has come out on Hard Knocks, has a punctured lung. The reason being, a team doctor was giving him a shot to play. Supposed to be in between his ribs and actually punctured his lung pre-game. So Justin Herbert, the rookie quarterback, sixth overall pick out of Oregon for the Chargers, he was told he was going to start the game about 20 seconds before kickoff. First off, both of you guys, you know, obviously played at a very high level in the league for a very long time. What is the deal with this? Have you ever heard of a story like this? What was your interaction with team doctors maybe getting shot? Yeah.
So the only thing I know about with this, I don't have a personal story. The only story I've heard, and this is a teammate that Willie had, but Troy Polamalu, before his last college game in the Orange Bowl with USC, was getting a Toradol shot, and they hit a nerve, and his whole leg went numb. Mm. So he didn't play in the game, and he freaked out. Destroyed the locker room. Like, they were pissed. And I've heard this from multiple sources at USC. So, I don't even know how that happens. I'm sure it was clearly an accident. But now, moving forward, it's like, you know, they were trying to get him to play again, almost like, oh, my bad, you can still start. Like, are you kidding me? Right. So I don't know. That's a tough one for me. And then what makes it even tougher is Herbert goes in there and plays pretty damn well.
Yeah, he lights it up.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, he runs the ball well. He makes good decisions, takes care of the ball for the most part. And, I mean, they're in a shootout. They go to overtime against the defending champs. So I don't know what else you want out of your rookie quarterback. Now you're in this awkward position. I mean, he's not going to be able to play for a while. Like, the doctors aren't going to feel comfortable after making this kind of mistake. Mm-hmm. You don't feel comfortable putting him back out on the field for at least, you know, I would say maybe 2 to 3 weeks, like at the earliest, right? Because if you put him out there and then he hurts the same lung that you initiated the problem with, bro, you're done. Like, you could lose your license. You're definitely done with the team. Like, that's just, I mean, it just gets worse and worse, right? So,
and I think it's,
this one's a tough one for me.
It was crazy about it. So Tyrod Taylor he ended up having two cracked ribs. He suffered against the opener against the Bengals. And what's wild about it is, I know I've been shot up. I know, Mark, you've been shot up. We've all kind of taken needle in some different type of aspect. This is a painkiller. When you have a guy who's old, I think the doctor was old. He was the old shaky, rattle me bones ass old doctor, right? And Tyrod Taylor, like, This should have happened with multiple doctors. You got to put whoever's handling the needle, you got to make sure he's qualified with handling the needle. And I'm not talking about by having degrees on the wall. Is he physically fit to put a needle in his hand and make sure he doesn't make a mistake? Because like Mark was talking about the Troy story, it was an accident. We get that. But here's a guy who has two cracked ribs, who's willing to suck it up. And I just say, and let's go back to that game. Justin Herbert played great, but he took a lot of big fucking shots. I mean, he was getting clinked up. And what happens if Justin Herbert now gets hurt? What position are the Chargers in? You know what I mean? So it's not just about Tyrod getting hurt and obviously suffering that, you know, his fucking lung is – punch your lung is nothing to sneeze at. But on top of that, Herbert goes out there in the second half and gets fucking annihilated. Now Chargers are looking like, our seasons are fucking done. Like, what are we going to do? So it's just a ripple effect. I feel bad for Tyrod because he is getting long in the tooth. He's played a lot of football. He's been around a lot. Chances are his time in L.A. is done. You know, there's no way. To Mark's point, there's no way you can put Tyrod back out there. Yeah. One, seeing how Justin played, and two, everybody on that Charger team is like, listen, we like Tyrod, but this fucking guy is pretty fucking sick. We're trying to win. You know what I mean? So he may have just lost the locker room, and Tyrod Taylor got fucking Wally Pipp, and he wasn't even trying to.
Yeah. I mean, credit to him for even trying to play, right? I mean, yeah. With cracked ribs, like you're torquing a lot in your torso. And like you said, if he would have taken any of those hits, if the doctor didn't puncture his lung, I think one of those hits would have.
No
because
question.
Justin Herbert got blasted last week and kept getting up and kept delivering the ball. So they're in a tricky spot, man. I don't envy that. I don't envy Coach Lynn. You know, he was our running backs coach in New York. And I mean, talk about a pickle, man. What the hell is he going to do?
So from a fan perspective, where do these shots take place? Are they in the training room, like fully, like,
yeah,
unclothed, or pre-game. Is it like kind of out pregame on the field? If he doesn't,
they're behind.
Willie started to sweat. Don't get him excited.
They're behind a Chuck E. Cheese next to a dumpster. No, they're usually done in a training room. The problem with the needles, man, is for old goat like me, when I needed them, I couldn't fucking play without them. Like, they don't warm up. They don't really kick in until like midway through the first quarter. So the halftime, you're fucking, you know, you're rickety out there until you feel like, oh shit, I can get on my toes. Let me get running.
Right.
So it's just, it's different strokes for different folks. But if I'm Tyrod, I mean, my lawyers have to be involved at some point.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the days of the Tordal shots where you literally see a bunch of butt cheeks lined up against the hallway wall, depending on what, like when you're at home, you know exactly where they're going to be, but on the road, you don't necessarily remember the locker room all the way. And so they just kind of find a long strip of locker room wall. And then everybody's kind of one butt cheek out. And once somebody's going by with the needle, somebody's holding a tray of needles and somebody's putting a Band-Aid right over them, you know, just bam, bam, bam. And it's like an assembly line of Tordal shots. Now they don't do that anymore. So if you're getting shot up, you're getting something in your AC joint, in your ribs or your knee or your ankle. But I know they're a lot more, protective with administering those things.
Right.
But when this happens, I mean, this just looks bad for everybody.
Yeah. Transitioning to another specific injury.
What's that?
Or maybe not a specific injury, but MetLife Field is a place where you guys called home for quite a while. San Francisco 49ers played the Jets this weekend in New York at MetLife Stadium. We had Nick Bosa, their star defensive end, tearing his ACL. Several other injuries. Jimmy Garoppolo had a high sprained ankle. Their running back, Raheem Mostert, hurt his knee. Injuries really across the team. Now, you guys, the 49ers complained saying that the field at MetLife is not really up to snuff with the rest of the league. We've heard things like this about FedEx Field in Chicago and a couple other fields, but you guys obviously have a ton of experience playing on the field at MetLife. What would you say about it? And is it up to par with the rest of the league?
So, it can't be the exact same turf that we played on.
No.
I mean, I'm sure they've re-turfed it. It was always, turf in general, some are a little more spongy, some are a little harder. Weather plays a factor. When it's real hot, it's a little softer. When it's really cold, it's like freaking concrete. So, I'm sure it's a lot easier for the stadiums to have, you know, to have artificial turf, or else, like, you know, Willie, when you're in Pittsburgh, then you guys play on it, Pitt plays on it. They got high school games on it. By the time you get to the playoffs, going to play there, it's like, you're playing in a baseball infield, so it sucks. But I never had any specific problems that way with it, but if multiple people are saying it, you know, maybe there's something there, where there's smoke there's fire kind of thing. But the other issue is, I mean, they play there this week again.
Yeah, brutal.
So whatever it is, the Virginia head, or it's a legitimate concern, it's got to be addressed and hopefully fixed by Sunday, because that's ridiculous.
And then it's kind of a weak excuse, right? Because as much as we can, 49ers can sit back and say, well, we lost Bosa, we lost Solomon Thomas. I think Jimmy G was just a football injury. He just got caught up. But on the other side, if you look at the Giants, they lost Saquon. Like, Saquon was the core of their team. So, like, you don't see Joe Judge be like, well, the turf just wasn't agreeing with us today, obviously. Like, you just got to take the L. And anytime you start blaming – and I get that, because I played in Pittsburgh where our field was notoriously known for being bad. I mean, we've had teams that would complain to not only the league offices and whoever about the field conditions. And, like, as Mark just stated, Pitt had been on it. high school had been on. By the time we got to it, they tried to do the best patchwork job they could, just so it could be suitable for us. But then you don't take into account the weather. It's Pittsburgh. It's fucking snowing. It's raining. It's gray. It's cold, which makes the field extra hard. So to attribute that to why the injuries happen, I think it's a little far. I mean, Solomon Thomas was getting off the ball, stepped wrong, boom, there goes knee. Nick Bosa was actually in the process of getting pancaked and trying to fight it off. You know what I mean? So it wasn't like he just – it's different from a guy running off the field and he stops and bang. Like Saquon Barkley was trying to fight off Eddie Jackson, and he's doing it on one leg, trying to make a foot, So at some point, we got like, these are football players who tragically got hurt playing football. You know, it just wasn't to blame it on the turf, as it seems we got to pause on that. Because I think if you start doing that, then you're going to have teams and other people a week before the game, but go check the turf out. You can't lose this one. Bitch, you lost because you the better team won. But just let
and play the spade. Yeah. Part of it, it's got to be, too, this lack of preseason. As much as you hate the preseason, at least in week one, you get twisted, you get turned in your, 3 to 10 plays. Then the next week, you get about 20 plays. Then the next week, you play about a half, maybe into the third quarter as a starter. And then you get basically like a 10-day break, and then you're back on the field. So it gives your body and your joints and ligaments a chance to kind of ramp up and get ready for football, because you're not going to the ground all the time in practice. And all they've had was a month of not going to the ground. There were very few, I guarantee there were very few full tackle, full contact scrimmages, right?
Right.
Like, it's just unsafe to just go 0 to 100 and start week one. And I understand why they did it because of the COVID issue, but I think we're seeing the other side of it. And that's with this surplus of injuries.
And to your point, Mark, I talked about this earlier on our show. I was like, listen, you got to understand the fact that they didn't play anybody else. Anytime there's an inner squad scrimmage, your coaches keep like, hey, man, we're watching this. I need you guys to get after each other. We're looking for the best, product out here. We got to make hard decisions coming up in a week. You're not going to kill the guy. You're not going to kill. That's your teammate at the end of the day.
Right.
As much as I went against Muhammad Wilkerson and Snacks and Quentin Copeland and all those guys, and as much as I love rooting those at getting after their ass and rooting them up out of there, that's still a guy I have to suit up with and play with on Sunday.
Right.
Who I need him to be productive in order for me to win. It's different when for 2 weeks I've been banging against Muhammad Wilkerson and Q and all these guys, and then all of a sudden Denver rolls in town. I'm biting at the bit to kick Denver's ass because now I'm fighting somebody else. It's a different feeling. It's a different level of anxiety. You're kind of hyped up because now you're in a real – now the guy across from you really doesn't care about your well-being. He's more cared about his, and I'm cared about now. So now it's like, all right, motherfucker, let's go. So now you take that element away from it. Now you go, all right, now week one here, week two, live bullets. It's a reactionary time. Your body is awareness. There's a lot of things from what Mark's saying that doesn't play a factor, that does play a factor when you don't have preseason. And I say this too, and Mark, maybe you can agree with me. I think two things happen. I think a lot of guys overtrain on concrete, because there weren't a lot of gyms open. So you had a lot of guys working out, running on concrete, and that load pressure, and you do that repetitively after a while, something's going to give. On the flip side of that, I think a lot of guys went into training camp to get in shape because they didn't know if COVID was going to happen. They didn't know if because of COVID, what was going to happen and whatnot. So I think you take all that into, throw that in the pot. I'm not surprised it seemed like the Grim Reaper went across the fucking NFL Sunday and was just picking people off. And I wouldn't be surprised week three is going to happen again. A lot of guys are still getting in shape, football shape. And the only way to get in football shape is to play football.
Yeah, look at the Pat. I 100% agree. It just depends on what access to different facilities you had during the quarantine stretch, right? Some guys are out on a farm. Some guys are like getting bales. Other guys have a full-on gym, right next to their house or in their house, and they have a certain advantage. But it's different when you put on cleats, you start twisting in the turf, your joints react different. Like you said, the reaction time. And when you talk about football shape, all I know is that Sunday night game, New England looked tired at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, they looked tired. I'm going sideways on this, but they looked tired. I mean, Edelman and Bird, by the way, balled out. But Edelman looked tired, man. He's on the field. I mean, he had to be on almost every offensive snap, and these guys are exhausted. So it's just a different kind of shape that you get into, and it takes those first 2 to 3 weeks, really, to get in that shape. So I think we're just seeing the result of that.
we can actually use that transition to go right into the games. But the week three preview is brought to you by Rocky Boots. Most of the time I wear sneakers, but I was hiking a few weeks ago, brought my Rocky Boots, and they were awesome. These boots keep your feet cool and comfortable, whether you're working a tough job or just hanging out in the backyard. Since 1932, Rocky Boots has been headquartered in Nelsonville, Ohio. They're a middle America company with middle America sensibilities. Not one of these pretentious boot companies that's $450 for a pair of boots. Rocky made great boots and shoes at a fair price. Give them a try next time you're hiking or fishing or working or grilling. Your feet will thank you. Rocky and rugged since 1932. It's fall now, so get a new pair of Rocky boots. Get outside. The weather is beautiful. Go to rockyboots.com. Enter the promo code GOINGDEEP. That's G-O-I-N-G-D-E-E-P, the name of this podcast, at checkout for 25% off your next pair of boots. Again, that's rockyboots.com. Enter the promo code GOINGDEEP for 25%. Now, let's actually transition and, you know, as I mentioned, talk about the week three slate. Let's stay on New England because they had a crazy Sunday night game in Seattle coming up. About a yard and a half short, Mark, you mentioned they looked pretty tired. They're going to be playing the upstart Raiders, who are 2-0, the Las Vegas Raiders. How are we thinking about this game, Vegas, as far as the sharps, like the Patriots, 6.5-point favorites? This game is in Foxborough. Mark and Willie, what do you guys think about the show? Mark, let's start with you.
Oof. I mean, coming off that last game, like I said, they just looked tired by the end of the game. And part of that's getting in football shape. Part of that's having to keep up with Seattle because they were, you know, at times it looked like they could score at will. But a lot of that has to get flushed out. They got to, you know, regroup. I was hoping on that goal line stand, they got to have another wrinkle in that package.
They where, had the fullback, you know, Cam's throw.
Basically,
they used it.
Right. So they have that. They got to have some sort of option off the edge. They got to have, you know, they use the fake block and Cam looks like he's going to run and then the little jump pass almost. But they got to have like 10 plays out of that thing because that's going to be, and Willie knows this, that's going to be such a pain in the ass for teams to have to practice for. Every, you know, Thursday, Friday, when you go through short yardage and goal line, they're going to have to go through all of them, especially if those plays can look the same, because that's what the offense wants, right? I show you the same formation, same motion, same backfield, boom, now we have 10 different plays out of this. Mm-hmm. And the defense is like, damn. Okay, so it's just going to exhaust teams. But on the flip side with the Raiders, man, if I think Carr played pretty well, if he could hit maybe, I mean, we're talking just one more of those deep balls to Ruggs, because they were like, you know, rockets past them, right? When he was on, he was on. But almost like I would say, Carr, go watch Russell Wilson, the way he puts air under his ball for DK Metcalf.
Yeah.
Bro, let him go get it. Give him the jump ball. You know, the receiver's has the advantage because he's looking back at the ball. The DB is going to catch up and either pass interfere with the ball or the receiver's going to catch it or break it up. Like when they're one-on-one like that, the DB is in a very tough spot. So a couple of them, he just launched them almost out of the freaking stadium. I was like, damn, he had them, you know? So I just feel like if he starts connecting on those, oh my God, it could be lights out. The Raiders looked really strong.
Yeah, it's tough for me. I want to be all in on the Raiders, but it's tough because I don't know if it's a product of just raw emotions, playing at the Death Star in Las Vegas, Josh Jacobs, Gruden, and the fact that Drew Brees didn't look good. You know what I mean? Like, I know, Stephen Che, you've been on his ass for 2 weeks, but you're right. Like, Monday night, Drew Brees looked washed. And it was tough to see because, you know, my wife's a diehard Saints fan, and we're sitting down watching a game, and I'm saying to myself, what the fuck? Like, it's Monday night. This is where Drew Brees comes
Willie.
Alive.
Profound.
Thank you. I'm sitting there like, what the fuck am I looking at? And I'm sitting there saying to myself, this is not the Drew Brees we're accustomed to.
Well, they didn't have Mike Thomas. They couldn't go down the field, bro. They were everything.
But they did have the big tight end. What's his name? I forgot his name. Number 87, Che. You know him.
Aaron Cook.
Yeah. That kid is a fucking, I mean, 6'7". You could hit him in a fucking, you can hit him anywhere. But overall, what I'm trying to say, I want the Raiders. I want to be a belief. I think New England right now, I think they know who they are. I think Cam is going to eventually be exposed. They're going to force him to throw more. But he has some good shots Monday night. I'm not all in on Raiders, but I see New England winning and just being New England. I don't really have the Raiders fucking winning me over, because I don't know if it was Drew Brees stinking it up or just those guys were just happy to be at home.
Welcome to the correct side of history with the Drew Brees. He's done. He's so done.
No, I'm a fan of Drew, man. I want him to be. I knew, you know what's funny, because when we had our back and forth when we were doing it, and went back to last year when I went to New Orleans to see them play the Cardinals, and that was his first game back from the injury. And Teddy had went 5-0, and that place is rocking, and the crowd started cheering Teddy. I told you that, remember, Trey? And fucking, yep. I remember looking at Drew Brees, and he was so annoyed by that. Like, most guys would be like, oh, yeah, Teddy, you know. He was like, fuck this guy. And I remember walking at the end of the game, some diehard Saints fan was like, I don't know about you, but Drew stunk today. And when I kind of pieced the game back in my head, he didn't look great in that game. They just had the defense was humming, Alvin Kamara's humming. And he just was able to just get it done that day. And then he was able to kind of pull it together towards the end of through the rest of the season. But before that, Teddy Bridgewater was really playing exceptionally well. They went 5-0 with him. And he had really won over the Who Dat Nation. And so maybe that should have been a sign for everybody that Drew's maybe washed and he needs to get out of here.
Dude, he hurt his thumb. Like,
last year.
It's hard. Yeah, I know. But he came back from that injury and – I've done that to my throwing hand while I had a bone thing. So it feels like when you grab the ball, it feels like the surface of the ball, it feels like it goes through it. Like it doesn't feel right when you start holding it. I had to throw a Nerf ball for like a month. So it's just a pain in the ass. And yeah, he's older. Like you see him even in warmups, the ball looks kind of like, you know, and I get it, but he's almost like,
it looked like he's throwing a watermelon out there.
He can anticipate so well. They scheme so well for him. He has such good players that all those other pieces are going to make him look good because he can anticipate. He doesn't have to throw that bullet. He's not going to be able to throw it like Justin Herbert last second, you know, oh shit, boom, and just hum a ball in there. He can't do that anymore. But he also knows that. And he's played for so long that he has the pieces in place to make it work. Peyton's going to put him in good situations. He's not going to have to chuck it 30 yards consistently. But you see what happens when you take one of those playmakers away that he can't throw the ball to at the line of scrimmage, 6 yards down the field, shallow cross, 3.5 yards down the field. Bro, he looks a little more human because now he's going to have to do stuff down the field more consistently, and it makes his job a lot tougher. The wear and tear starts to show.
So let me ask you this. When, let's just say we continue to see old shaky-ass Drew Brees, at what point do we say, bring in Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston? What week do you think?
He's got to really be the reason that they're losing games. I mean, it's got to be like.
They lost Monday. They could lose this week.
Like, obvious. You know, he's got to lose. You know, man, guys are just wide open and the ball's like dribbling there. Or, you know, he can't recover from, you know, some hits or whatever. I think he's going to be fine. Remember, he's got to ramp up too. And this guy, if anybody's going to be ready by the end of the year, kind of conserve their energy and crescendo at the right time, you would think it's guys like LeBron, like Drew Brees. These guys just know how it works. And I don't think he's phased at all. Sure, he's aged. He's old. So is Tom Brady. Like, he doesn't have the same zip on the ball, but they're going to figure out a way to get it done. And I'd still give him a couple more weeks.
So we got
I didn't play quarterback. I think it's
Well, we got New Orleans visiting Green Bay this week. It's a Sunday night game, 8:20. The Saints are actually favored by 3 in this road game. The Saints are actually a very good road team, actually a better road team than a home team, which is surprising. Drew Brees said that it's really not his job to throw the ball downfield for a ton of yards, but to orchestrate the offense.
Again, you know, my job is to move the football, get first downs, possess the ball, score points, right? And so however we can do that, we're going to do it. One of the statistics that was thrown out after the game was, you know, the yards per attempt or something like that. I mean, there are many statistics I do not pay one bit of attention to, and that would be one of them.
I mean, Mark, how would you relate to that in terms of, just being a quarterback? How would you outline Drew Brees as doing in his job right now? Do you think he's doing it well or needs to be improved?
I think he's doing just fine. I don't think it's necessarily an MVP year quite yet. But let's face it, people are so so enamored with the Lamar Jacksons and Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watsons that that has now become the new standard. So for Drew Brees to understand his limitations due to age and be Steve Nash and the point guard and just bam, bam, constantly just wear you down a slow death of 1,000 paper cuts, people don't want to see that. They just don't want that. They want the splashy play, the no look, you know, throw from Lamar, the roll left, throw back to Mark Ingram from, the roll left, throw back to Mark Ingram from Lamar. They want the no look from Mahomes. That's what people want. And I get it, because once you've had it, you're like, whoa, I don't want this plain cupcake anymore. I want all this cool shit. I want the sprinkles. I want the syrup. I want the fudge. I want all of it. Give me everything. So it's a little unfair to judge him that way, but at the end of the day, he's going to be judged on completion percentage. He's going to be judged on touchdown to interception ratio, third down conversions, and red zone conversions. So that's, I mean, yeah, they lost the game. They dropped one on the road to a team that they probably could have beat, but they did run into an emotional buzzsaw with, the Las Vegas Raiders opening up their new stadium, all that kind of stuff. So listen, I think it's a little early, but this week, I think Drew Brees is lucky he's getting Green Bay now before it's, you know, late December and having to go win a game up there when it's freezing cold and he's even 3-4 months older, right? It sounds crazy, but yeah, after a long season, after getting put on the turf a few times, bro, he don't want that game later in the year. And I still think they might be outmatched. The way Aaron Rodgers is on this freaking scorched earth tour, holy cow.
Drinking
this dude
tequila.
Is like, yeah, bro. He's like in that, you know, especially since the passing of Kobe, everybody wants to adopt that Mamba mentality,
yeah. You
know, whether it's LeBron or whether it's Aaron Rodgers, these guys want to like show that. After the Jordan documentary, people are like, whoa, this is cool again to be an asshole competitor. Let's do that. I want to beat people's ass. I don't want to just beat them. I want to embarrass them, you know, and that's the way Aaron Rodgers is playing right now. You get a guy with that kind of talent and that kind of attitude, you put them together, bro, watch out. He might light them up.
I think that what's also interesting about Drew Brees, like even though he's won, and obviously quarterbacks and, you know, they get a lot of shit. Mark, you can talk about that. You can talk honestly about that. But I also think from a mental standpoint, Drew's never saw himself as the problem to why the Saints are losing, right? Like he's always he's had bad games or things never clicked or some. But I think now he's start maybe looking in the mirror like, I may be the reason why we don't look as efficient or we don't look as polished as we has had him before. And valid, it's week fucking two, week three, no preseason. There's a lot to attribute to that. But I think it's different when you kind of look in the mirror and be like, I may be the reason why we're not. Because a game like I'm looking at Monday night game, Drew Brees, fourth quarter, that's him. He's taking over that game. He's making all, he's doing everything right. He's dominating. He's converting. He may even, if need be, he may scramble a little bit to buy some time. He looked washed. And I know you, and it's hard to say, and I know it's tough to kind of throw it out there, but he looked like a guy who probably is starting to see himself in the mirror a little different. And we'll see how he responds Sunday. Because I know a lot of people are going to look to the bench and be like, you know what? You got two young guys. I had no problem throwing them out there. So we'll see, man.
Let's talk about maybe the presumptive favorite in that division now that Drew Brees looks so washed. My Tampa Bay Buccaneers go to Denver. Denver's had some just brutal injury luck this year. Von Miller obviously getting hurt right before the season, out for the year, probably their best player. Now Drew Lock has been injured. They just signed Blake Bortles, who obviously is not going to get up to speed this week. Who do you guys like in this game? The Bucs are 6-point favorites in Denver, looking to take control of the division. And then Mark, with Blake Bortles' situation specifically, you know, going to a new team with a new coach, how long does it actually take to get ramped up?
Oh, man, that is one of the hardest things to do. I tried to do it a couple times. And unless you know that system, like it would have almost been better to go in and run my college system, like the college verbiage or something, because as much as you know, there's going to be these communication things, the way they come in, the way the play is called, when the clock runs down, it's just something's going to get cut off and you're going to be searching for like the right word, the right play. You're going to call a play in a language that nobody else speaks but you, and you're talking about a play that they have, but you're saying a different word, and everybody looks at you like you're Frankenstein, like, what's wrong with this guy? So it's, I mean, perfect example, Monday night in Washington, we're at Philly, I'm playing for the Redskins, and Ty Nasecki, number 78, 79, I want to say. I know his name now, and you'll see why because of this story. But he's supposed to tap the center, Chase Roullier, and I'm doing a silent cadence for the crowd in Philly, and I'm lifting my leg. I'm lifting my leg and, like, waiting for Ty to tap him, and Ty's not turning around. So I'm like, hey, 79, hey, because I didn't even know the guy's name because he was playing tackle before, and now he's playing guard, and I'm, like, trying to remember everybody's name and the plays and the offense, whatever. And so I burn a timeout. And everybody's pissed, dude. Everybody on the sidelines just pissed. Like, what are we doing? You know, it's the first quarter. We're burning timeouts. Colt McCoy just got hurt. So everybody's freaking out. And I was like, dude, I didn't know what to do. Ty didn't look back at me. And he goes, well, I didn't know what to do. I've never played guard before. I'm like, bro, I just got here. Like, what do you want me to do? I literally showed up a week ago. And now we're on the field together. So if your expectations are a little too high for Blake Bortles, that's unrealistic, and it's not really reflective of his talent. Like, if you're expecting him to come in and be the AFC Championship Blake Bortles that was, you know, close to beating New England with,
5 minutes on the clock.
Yeah, with, like, 5 minutes on the clock. Yeah. Bro, they were going to the Super Bowl, yep. Blake Bortles.
Pretty much.
If you expect that this week, you're out of your mind. You're out of touch with reality, and it's just a totally unfair high expectation. I expect Tampa Bay to go in there and handle business. I mean, the altitude is going to be a little bit of an issue, but they just have too many horses. And I don't think, you know, no pun intended, I don't think the Broncos can run with them.
Yeah, I agree with Mark. Listen, no Drew Locke. The fucking, say whatever you want about Jerry Jeudy. If nobody can throw him the ball, he's going to be useless. The defense is a shambles. They got beat up in Pittsburgh. They knew it. Tampa's going to fucking walk all over him. It'll be, I just don't want to see your face after the game, Che, because that's what's still going to be the most fucking annoying part about it. You're going to be smiling that Tom Brady's fucking, you know, that Jesus is back on earth. So it's going to be annoying.
I'm looking forward to hopefully another victory Monday. But we'll see. I mean, Jeff Driscoll's going to start. The Bucks are going to debut their all pewter uniforms. So it'll be a memorable game. America's game of the week. Cortland Sutton's also out for the year. So, I mean, Denver just absolutely ravaged by injuries. Hopefully they have a successful year after this week.
Question. I got a question for you, Mark, before you move on, Shay. While you were in Denver, man, what was the locker room like? Because I think it's for a guy, obviously I've never played for the Broncos, but a lot of people talk about the culture in Denver. We had Kareem Jackson on, the safety. And he pretty much was like, listen, man, it was a lot of, we were fortunate to have a lot of old heads to kind of steer the way. And he just was hyped up about the season and everything going on. But your experience being around Elway, being in the building, being around, you know, the Orange Crush, what was their perception of you and what was your perception about the Broncos?
Yeah, so I have as much as that, gosh, literally, like, broke my heart getting cut there and going to Dallas, sitting in the office with Elway and, sorry, dude, we're going to go with Trevor Siemian. Appreciate your help. And I was just like, what? Like, bro, I had your poster on my wall as a child. Like, I love you. I jumped off the beanbag with my dad watching you helicopter in the Super Bowl for a first down. Like, wow, this kind of hurts. But all that being said, and all those, you know, wimpy emotions aside, I guess, because we're these big, strong men. Right.
Did you cry?
I didn't cry. I'm pretty damn close though. I wanted to just, like, go give him a hug. I was like, just cut me and sign me for nothing. Like, I'll play for minimum, whatever. Just give me a shot here. Cause I knew the kind of team that they had,
right.
But that locker room, it was still, TJ Ward was still there. Aqib Talib was still there. DeMarcus Ware, Von Miller, Peyton had just left. And then on offense, it was Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, Matt Paradis, who just won the Super Bowl as a rookie. Mm-hmm. At center, and they were, like, such a tight-knit group. They were, you could tell they'd been around a long time together. Chris Harris was there, Chris Harris Jr. on defense, who was still proving himself, like, to be one of the best corners in the league. He was hungry, man. And these guys, like, went at it. at practice. And the best teams I've been on have been very competitive in practice. It's not like, oh, let's just run these plays and do these drills. It was like, all right, these drills, I'm going to get ramped up for practice. But when it's time to scrimmage, like, we're going to beat their ass.
Right.
And we're going to tell them about it. And, dude, these guys were jawing back and forth constantly. And I loved it. It was like, it just gives everybody juice, man. And you can't do that until you've been around enough, mm-hmm. until you have the old heads running shit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they explain it to people without talking, just the way they act, the way they take care of their body, the way they bring the rookies along. You know, you give the rookie a little bit of crap here and there, but you still got your arm around them to bring them up. Like, you're going to help us win. Sure. One of us is going to go down and you're going to get your shot. You're going to help us win. So when that happens, it's on, and you're going to remember this, what I taught you, kind of thing. So it was, everybody's marching in the same direction. And as much as it hurt me to get cut there and go to Dallas, I respected them so much, because even if they were, it's just like, you know, on the offense, Willie, if the quarterback identifies the mic, maybe he's wrong on his point, but the center agrees, boom, you go that way. At least we know what direction we're going. Sure. We can all be wrong, but at least we're all wrong together and figure it out. Mm-hmm. So even if Denver is wrong on a pick or a decision or a call, whatever, they're all marching in the same direction. And that's credit to John Elway, because he was incredible, man. As much as it hurt me, like I said, I was just like, damn, I respect them. That was one of the most, that was one of the tightest organizations I've been around. One of the, I mean, from everybody, the PR, the community relations, everything was just streamlined. Everything was going in the right direction, and or at least in the same direction, even if they made mistakes and like cutting me. So it's it was really, honestly, I would say it's an honor to play there, especially having, you know, so much love for John Elway and that team. Mm-hmm. I was just impressed with the way that it was a well-oiled machine with some serious veterans. So right now they're just going through it. They're going through an injury bug, and they got to try and bounce back, piece the season together, and then, you know, go at it again next year.
Mm. Yeah. Let's get into the place you went right after. You mentioned Dallas. Mark, first I want to talk to you about finding a home, actually, in Dallas. Finding a new home that fits your family can be tricky. You want room to spread out, space to gather, and a place to just get away from it all. Luckily, when you need a mortgage that fits your family needs, a great place to look is Rocket. When I'm looking for a new house, I'm not thinking, is my mortgage going to work for me? To be honest, I didn't know that was an option until I worked with Rocket Mortgage. Want to see how different down payment impacts your monthly payment? No problem. It's easy to see with your loan options, adjust payments, closing costs, all online in real time. How helpful is that? When you need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family, Rocket can. That's because they provide the tools and expertise you need to understand it all. And you'll know all your options that works for your family and for you. Not sure if you're ready to buy yet? Check out their home buyer's guide for online tips to where to start. When you are ready and you need a lender who will help you understand all your mortgage options, Rocket can. Get started online at rocketmortgage.com/playbook. Again, that's rocketmortgage.com/playbook. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. As a homeowner myself, I'd say very important to understand your mortgage. Now, that was obviously a transition, but let's talk about the Cowboys at Seahawks game. The Cowboys with, I mean, they're a storied franchise, but this was quite a win they had last week against the Atlanta Falcons at home, avoiding the 0-2 hole. Something I would love to hear from both of you guys. So this was a situation last week. The Cowboys were down by 15 points. They scored a touchdown with a couple of minutes left, and Mike McCarthy went for two. So the lead at that point was 9. He went for two. They did not get it, so it remained a two-possession game. What are your guys' thoughts on that exact play, and what would you have been thinking if you were a player that were playing under?
I mean, listen, there's a sheet on the call sheet. There's a little section for when you're supposed to go for two, right? Because in the moment, you don't want to have to think about it, but you just do the math on like, okay, do we want this to be a two possession, or it's already going to be a one possession? And generally that tells you when. right? But off the top of your head, I'd say, I don't know, maybe half the coordinators in the league, if you just threw out a number, down 9, down 15, down 12, you know, mm-hmm. not everybody's going to know exactly, but what you do is you just look at that little cheat sheet. It's like this big, it's like a 3x5 card or smaller. And it just tells you all the different, you know, point differentials and when to go for two. So that, you know, those kind of mistakes are tough to have. Just all I know is being in Dallas for that 1 year, Dak's rookie year, when it's good, it's great. When it's, you know, okay, it's just, you know, the sinking Titanic, like, you know, everybody just loses their mind, similar to New York. But they just get, he's either, you know, the hero or just some, you know, guy that they pulled off the street. So, you know, I feel for Dak. I'm just glad they avoided 0-2 because it would have been, you know, the end of the world. And Atlanta's got to be the best 0-2 team in football.
I said the same thing when I looked up and they were down, it was 17-0 and the Cowboys were down. I'm saying to myself, oh, it's about to be a wrap. Like, I just there's no way I saw the Cowboys coming back from that. Just because, to Mark's point, you know, valid whatever you say about Dak. When Cowboys went in their head, they're the biggest front runners, the best front runners in the NFL. They ride. For them to be down, I said, oh, this is over. I actually didn't even pay attention to it anymore. It took all the way up to, like, then later in the day where I kind of got the score. And I said to myself, that goddamn Atlanta defense is god-awful. They're so fucking bad to let the fucking Cowboys and Zeke and all them boys rush. And the offsides kick, first of all, that's the dumbest shit I've ever seen in football. How do you not know?
Bro, I was on the plane. I was on the plane flying home from doing ESPN and ABC, and I had my mask on, and I yelled, grab the ball! Yes, yes. The lady just looked at me like, excuse me, sir? I was like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry.
It was me, I mean,
like, should. I was happy for Dak. Like, I love Dak. He's great. But I was just so surprised that none of those players just jumped on the ball. The defense thought it had to go 10 yards, but they can get it whenever they want.
But if they touch it and it only goes 8, then you're leaving yourself open. It was a spinning ball on the ground. It was what they call a watermelon kick. So no stand. They're not kicking it off of tee. And Greg Zuerlein, the kicker, basically just spun it. So it would be a very difficult ball to pick up. So if you're 8 yards away and it doesn't look like it's going 10, it is a risk to jump up. I'm just pointing that out. Now, I'm not saying they shouldn't have, but there is certainly inherent risk of being the GOAT there.
I am the type, I'd rather have my hand slap than not react at all. Like, my heart would have jumped through my fucking chest looking at a ball spin and spin when a herd of fucking Cowboys are running at me. Jump on the fucking ball. I'd rather be like, really, you fucking idiot. You fucked it up. All right. At least I reacted. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd rather swing at the third strike, then watch it go into the catcher's glove and, like,
fucking right.
Darn.
And what's worse about this, like, I know Mark too does too. Like, I have a soft spot for Dan Quinn, right? This was going to be his redemption game. You know, this was the game where we talked about going into this game, me and you, Che, where he's like, man, this guy's on the hot seat. Like, how long can Dan Quinn and his staff continue to stink it up? And when Matt Ryan's numbers are stupid, but on the defensive side, by the way, if you look at Atlanta's roster, they got fucking ball players on that squad.
They're loaded.
They're loaded. So look at an 0-2 team, and to consider that if you should take both 0-2 teams between Atlanta Falcons and the Giants, most people would say the Giants are the better 0-2 team. They're better than Atlanta. And when Atlanta has the better roster, they just made a bonehead fucking mistake that cost them. And now everybody, to Mark's point, everybody's blowing fucking Dak. And everybody's looking at Atlanta like, get everybody the fuck out the city. So it's wild, man.
But Dak played all right. He came back, played all right.
Played okay.
So speaking of Dak.
Okay, so don't do this for Dak. You know, give him some credit.
Well,
so, I'm just reading all the headlines. And everybody's like, oh, Dak, you're right. It's like fucking enough.
Well, you're such a hater, dude. You're such a hater.
Fuck them all.
So I'd love to hear both your guys' takes. So Russell Wilson, who's never gotten an MVP vote, is playing obviously at a super high level right now. This game against Dallas, I'd love to hear both of your guys' takes. Which quarterback would you rather have for the next 5 years, Russell Wilson or Dak Prescott?
Oh, dude.
I mean, Russell, I think, is about 31 right now.
Trey.
Why are you doing that to
Russell
me?
I'm a Wilson, Dak guy. Bro. Russell Wilson, bro. Come on, the comeback kid. He dumped that basic bitch he had and got Ciara. He fucking has two Super Bowls. He almost had three. He played with Beast Mode.
He almost had
one Super Bowl. Thank you. So excuse me. One Super Bowl. The guy's a fucking like. He doesn't get talked about enough. Actually, if you used to put,
I'd agree with that.
You used to talk about Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes. The fact that Russell Wilson isn't always in that conversation for being the most consistent, battle ready, hungry, fearless. I mean, Russell Wilson. I'm a big fan of the son of a bitch, man. I like him a lot. If I was to start my franchise, remember when Ditka fucking dressed up in a wedding dress from Ricky Williams? I'll be in a fucking wedding dress for fucking Russell Wilson if I had to dress. To draft him, excuse me. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm so uncomfortable. let's think here. Well, you'd do the Dennis Rodman. You'd get in the draft and marry yourself. Oh, damn. That's a tough question. I love Dak. You can't bet against Russ right now. He's on fire. He really has been. And what to his credit, he's done it without like the splashy receiver core till probably right now, right? Mm-hmm. Like when Tyler Lockett was their number one, you know, they still had Baldwin and all that kind of stuff, but it's never been like Julio Jones or, you know, right. They didn't have these guys that are just household names that jump off the page. You know, he's never had a receiver that was like number one in your fantasy, right? And all these other guys do. And so for him to be doing that, and the other thing too is Schottenheimer was there with me at the Jets. For 4 years and actually the first three. And after going through what he went through there, I think he learned a ton. I think where he's at now, understanding the kind of quarterback he has, because they're running, I'm sure it's a lot of the same verbiage, but it's a very different offense. Mm. So credit to him for tailoring that offense to that team, to those specific players, right? Because a lot of guys are like old school, like, hey, this is the offense, you fit in or get out. And that's not really it. The offense has to be malleable, right? You got to be able to transition to some things that you're better at based on the players you have. So I think where they're at, and I said this last year, but the play that goes into Russell's helmet, to me, that's like, it's like an essay prompt, right? It's just a starting point, bro. And if it ain't there, Russ, you go write me three beautiful paragraphs and do whatever the hell you want, because whatever you do is awesome.
Yeah.
So if it works out and DK Metcalf's your first read, boom, and you launch one up to the moon into orbit and it drops down right in his lap, great. But if that wasn't open, if DK fell down, I'm sure he would have made a play and threw it to somebody else, either Tyler Lockett or somebody else who we don't know, and got a first down. So whatever you want to do, Russ. If you want to take off and run and slide and not get hit and never get concussions and never get hurt, go for it. Or if you want to check out of this run, I don't really give a shit, but here's a starting point. You know, so that's kind of like credit to Shoddy for understanding who he has at quarterback, and credit to Coach Carroll for getting somebody like Shoddy to be able to do that. So they got it going on, man. It's they're going to be tough to beat.
Yeah.
KYP, know your personnel. All right, Willie, let's talk Steelers football.
Right, like, okay.
It's great. Coach speak. I love it.
Willie, let's talk Steelers football. Texans visiting the Steelers.
I'm going to go. See ya.
The Steelers are 3.5-point favorites. The Texans have potentially the hardest schedule first 3 weeks, maybe of any NFL team in history, at Kansas City versus Baltimore at home, and now traveling to Pittsburgh. They could be a really good team, but they're just – absolute murderer's row of schedules. Willie, we'll start with you this time. Who do we like this week? David DeCastro looking like he will play Sunday.
I mean, the Steelers. I think you talk about Houston. And listen, I like Houston. Listen, Coach Mike Devlin is their offensive line coach, who I know very well. He's my offensive line coach. Dev was an amazing. The one hiccup with this team is their offensive line. They struggle. And you talk about a blitz-happy Pittsburgh team that gets after your ass, and they get after your ass even worse at home when they're comfortable. It's going to be a long day for Deshaun Watson. And I think if they turn on that tape watching Denver, the key to that game is you better come with your run game, because if not, I'm invalid. David Johnson, who I think has reassured, and he looks good. He looks great, actually. They're going to have to lean on him, because Deshaun Watson won't have a lot of time in the pocket. They're going to get after his ass. They're going to hit him early, and they're going to hit him hard. They're going to force him to throw a turnover. So I think right now for the – I think Pittsburgh – one thing I haven't played at Pittsburgh and played against Pittsburgh, they're a very self-motivated team. You get what I'm saying? And Mark can attest to that. Like, there's outside motivation where everybody wants you to win and your family's behind you and the city's behind you and everything's going well. But it's different when you close those doors in your locker room. And to what Mark talked about the Broncos, when all the old heads is like, listen, we stack wins now, because later in the months it gets hard because guys get injured, things happen. Yeah. So the teams you're supposed to beat, you don't take for granted. You beat those fucking teams and you march on. I know that's how they're talking in Pittsburgh, because listen, Ben is playing out of his fucking mind. He looks great. He's fucking 38 years old. He looks like he could play another year if he stays healthy. But what they're saying to themselves in Pittsburgh is right now, this defense is right now Super Bowl winning defense. We have to maximize this time because we don't know we're going to be here again. So they're talking in the locker room for sure. The teams we're supposed to beat handle the motherfucking business. So that's why when you see them come out hot and they come out aggressive and you have the young kid Claypool running down the field looking like he's been in the league for 5 years, it's because the urgency, the self-motivation isn't coming from the media or anybody else. They're telling themselves, we're in the AFC North. We got two teams. We got one team right now that we can't look past, and that's the Baltimore Ravens. We got to see their ass twice. They haven't played them yet. And the rest of their Pittsburgh season is up and down. They got some quality games later down the road. So the teams that they got to knuckle up with, like a Deshaun Watson, like a Houston Texans coming to Pittsburgh, they got to wax that ass early, and they got to get rid of them. If they stumble, this is a sign that, like, all right, now you're going to have a situation where now I'm like, man, what's going on with Ben? All the rhetoric. They don't like hearing the rhetoric. They know what Mark said. When Dallas is winning, what? Everybody's on Dallas' side. When they're losing, fuck them all, right? Pittsburgh doesn't deal with it. They're like, listen, we're going to take the ebb and flow.
Yeah.
But we like being on the winning side of things, so we don't have to answer the bullshit.
No doubt. Credit to Tomlin, too. Coach Tomlin's kept that thing steady, right? Yeah. Like, they're just such a great example of a franchise that can handle the routine stuff, right? And then when it comes time to make a really big play, like, they'll roll the dice on it. Like, okay, yeah, we're supposed to, sure, we need a 4th and 13 to pull out of our ass. Okay, like, we'll take our best shot at it, but at least we're gonna get to that position, right? Mm-hmm. At least we're gonna get in the tournament, the playoffs, right? Like, they position themselves well. And it's because they handle games like this early in the season well, right? They're just way more physical than Houston. I just feel bad for Deshaun Watson, because to go against Pittsburgh, bro, Blitzburg, all they want to do is pressure you, confuse you, and beat your ass at the same time, like physically dominate you. So you're bruised and battered and you're walking out of the stadium with your tail between their legs. Like, that's what they want, right? So how do we compete against that with the Jets? Bro, we had to slam it down their throat. Uh-huh. We had to run the ball hard, bro. And on some third and shorts, say, I know it's 3rd and 3, 3rd and 4.
They got to run it.
Screw it. Run it.
Right.
Just to set the tone, to set the precedent. And it was like a principle thing. Just, this is what we're doing. Here's how it's going to be. If you're going to fight, we're going to fight. Let's go. And those were some of the best but toughest games I've ever been a part of. And that mentality never leaves that city. Then you throw in Juju, and now he's got some help with Chase Claypool. Bro, and Ben's healthy? Dude, look out. I mean, these guys, Claypool looks awesome.
Yep.
And Ben looks great. He looks like he's got a year off and, you know, quarantine time off. And he looks great, like an ex-girlfriend body, you know, like a revenge body. Like, he looks awesome. He looks like he does his first couple years in the league, like, much slimmer. You know, he's talking about eating better. He's talking about, you know, making good decisions, and just, he's a family guy now, you know, so he's matured and he just understands how fragile this time is and how short it is. And he's really taking advantage of it. Then you add that to their defense that is just going to beat your ass and confuse you. It's like, I just feel bad for Houston, man. That's going to be a tough spot for Deshaun Watson. He's going to be in 3rd and long. He's going to be standing there holding the ball, patting the ball, and just getting whacked in the back of the head. That's going to be a tough Sunday.
Some say they would equate it to the first day of prison, but that's what people say.
No, if you want to know about prison, let me tell you.
Let's talk about the big Monday night game, then we'll get into the Jets game. So we got Kansas City traveling to Baltimore, and this is going to be a super highly rated game. These are probably the two best young quarterbacks in the league with Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, the past two MVPs. Vegas likes Baltimore. They are 3.5-point favorites. The game is in Baltimore, it'll be Monday at 8:15. Who do you guys like, and which of these quarterbacks are you taking for the next 5 years?
Oh, that's the question.
Mark, we'll start with you.
Oh, man. You know, I'll give the Chiefs one on the road. I think they had a little scare last week. They might have been looking ahead just a tiny bit. I think, they're running such basic stuff now on offense. You can see the play calls. They almost had the throwback, like 13 boot throwback to Y, to Travis Kelce to win the game. And they're running the same stuff. It's double post. It's run the cheetah through the middle of the field and let Hardman or somebody else, you know, Sammy Watkins run the big in. Like, they run that three times a game, you know, but their players are so good that they're executing these plays so well. Mahomes knows where to go. He, in a similar way with Russ, maybe a little bit less, but that play is an essay prompt, and he's got a lot of wiggle room on how to make plays. And he learned from sitting on the bench behind Alex Smith how to take care of the football. So when that play gets longer and longer, he gets smarter and smarter with the football. I have a hard time seeing these guys lose. The big emphasis again this year is going to be on their defense. I know they held the Chargers and were, you know, competitive with them, but I mean, Baltimore looks like they can score at will. So to me, it's going to be a shootout, and whichever defense can get that final stop, that's going to be huge. Or it's going to be a penalty, potential injury, something like that. A special teams play that kind of flips the field, gives the defense the advantage, and they actually take advantage of it and either get the ball back or get a crucial stop. That's going to be the difference in the game, but I'll take Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I'm going with the Baltimore Ravens, and I'm going to tell you why, Stephen Che. Last year, they were supposed to be Super Bowl champs, but they fucked it up because they let Derrick Henry come into town and ran right up their ass. They haven't forgotten. The Kansas City Chiefs are the standard, right? Then when you're playing against the standard, you bring your best against the standard. And what I know a lot of what they're doing in Baltimore right now is a lot of people has been tapping us on the back saying we're going to win, and we haven't run one shit. Actually, the guys who won are actually showing up on Sunday, and they plan to win. And I know that kind of the cockiness that comes out of AFC North to what Mark was talking about earlier, the cockiness comes is we're not going to beat you. We're going to punish you. Because they understand when January comes around, they're going to have to see the Kansas City Chiefs again. And what happens with that, what you always try to leave somebody with, is that kind of thought like, ooh, remember when we played Baltimore week 3, how that went down? You always want to leave a little extra stank. So when they're preparing for you again, they understand they got to bring their A game. And so that never leaves. And I think the fact that they had that loss, it humbled them, losing to Tennessee in the fashion they lost. Now they're going against Patrick Mahomes, and they're going to do it when the world's watching. I expect Baltimore to come out fucking bloodlust. I honestly do. The issue with Kansas City right now is, can they stay healthy during this game? Because the nature of the physicality Baltimore plays with is gritty. And they like to get after you, and they like to get after you early. And with Mark Ingram and the way that offensive line is playing, with Lamar Jackson, who seems to do anything he wants on the goddamn field, watch out. It's gonna be face mask to face mask football. And I just got Baltimore bringing it home.
So this is gonna be an especially big game because this is the first year that we're doing 7 playoff teams in each conference, and there's only one bye available for both the AFC and NFC respectively. So the last 6 Super Bowl champions have all had first round byes. People forget that the Dolphins actually beat the Patriots and knocked them out of the bye, and Kansas City got in that bye to secure the number 2 seed, who obviously won last year. But this is going to be a huge game for down the road, potentially determining a tiebreaker situation. So this is a Monday night game with some big time juice.
Yeah. As far as starting the franchise, I'm going with Patrick Mahomes though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's not forget that you were picking the Houston Texans last week to beat up on these Baltimore Ravens, and they got the business put to them.
They were at home.
Oh my God.
They were at home.
What? Listen, do you guys need a fall intern? I'm available.
Jeez. Let's go from the marquee game of the week to many people's survivor pick of the week, and that is the Jets at the Colts. This is the biggest line of the week. The Colts are 10.5 point favorites. You guys, obviously both former Jets, would love to get your opinion on this game and the current state of the franchise. There's already talks about the Jets potentially getting one of the top picks. And do you make Sam Darnold available via trade? Mark, let's start with you.
For Sam's sake, I hope he goes somewhere where they're going to build around him, add players. But until that happens, you're not going to get the benefit of his splash plays, his consistency. I mean, their roster right now is no better than the roster we had my fourth and fifth year there. So whatever that was, 12, 13, 14-ish.
Yeah.
I mean, we had very little household names other than guys who had been there for a while. And then we poached Willie from the Steelers. But, I mean, we were bringing up receivers on a weekly basis, guys who weren't signed. And those players were catching touchdowns in a game. Like, this was insane that year. And their roster looks the exact same right now. Like, how do they let – I'm going to butcher his name – Kelechi Osemele? How does he leave? What happened there? How does Jamal Adams leave? How do you not have a big time receiver for Sam Darnold? Like, what do you want him to do? Look at Patrick Mahomes, look at Lamar Jackson, look at even Deshaun Watson. I mean, these guys have guys to throw to. They have real legitimate threats that a defensive coordinator is thinking about and watching specific film on those players, thinking, okay, are we going to double this guy? Do we want to just have safety help? When are we going to leave ourselves vulnerable and just man-to-man? Oh, man. And the quarterback can move a little bit? Shit, we can't play two, man. Okay. They're not doing that for the Jets right now. It's just, all right, let's just line up and play what we play because, I mean, what are we worried about? And that when you're in that situation, you're just so far behind the eight ball. It's not even funny. My heart breaks for the kid because, I obviously know him personally. I'm a little biased, but I'm trying to remove that bias and just think, like, compare apples to apples. He doesn't got any. He's got a bunch of bad apples, bro. That's just the bottom line. And it's really tough. It's really tough for him. I've been in that situation, and it sucks. And then you just got to wake up the next morning and pretend it's not real, and keep going and working and studying, and hopefully it doesn't affect his. It doesn't give him like shell shock. Because a lot of players that go through that, they're just like. You don't know if you've been in abusive relationships or something awful. Like when you go through that, you're just like, I don't know. I'm kind of scared to like trust anybody, I don't know if I can, maybe it's not going to be good. And maybe you don't get the full potential of Sam Darnold, which would be a shame.
So we had Jordan Palmer on, who is Sam Darnold's quarterback consultant. He said arm talent wise and just everything he brings mentally, everything physically, he's a top five guy in the league. And you see flashes of that even this past week where he's rolling left and he throws the ball on a rope to, I think, it was Paxton Berrios or something.
If you didn't see that, you'd be like, maybe not. Yeah. But when you continue to see that with a crappy supporting cast, help the guy out. Like, you're getting the signs of, oh, shoot, that looks like this. Man, he could be really good. Oh, yeah, let's help him. Oh, shit. Like, how hard is that?
Right.
Yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah, I think it's tough. One of the biggest mistakes the Jets have done recently was not signing Mike McCarthy. When they had the opportunity of bringing on Mike McCarthy, and I think the biggest hiccup was they didn't feel comfortable with Mike being the coach in the gym, which is bullshit. The guy has a Super Bowl. He's decorated, well-spoken. People speak highly about him. So I thought that was a big factor. I also think the fact that I'm happy with the Becton pick, they got him some protection on the left side. The guy's a fucking monster. I think if I was to compare him to anybody during my time playing, he plays like Jonathan Ogden. That's how Jonathan Ogden played. Jonathan Ogden was a big son of a bitch who just put his paws on you and you fucking went down. That's Becton. The issue with the Jets right now in particular is the fact that, I know when I got there in 13, there was a loss of identity. Because prior to that, when Mark was there and they had Jason Taylor and they had LaDainian Thomas and all these guys, there was an identity of who the fucking Jets were, and you had big bad Rex to back it up with his mouth. and his persona. That all went to the wash, and every year there's this kind of search to who's going to be the guy to restore us, and they did pick him. It is Sam Darnold. What's happening with the Jets right now, and obviously Mark hit on what the roster looks like, I don't think there's a core belief on what the Jets could be and what they are currently. They're just kind of going through the motions, and then you can see it, and it's evident. And sometimes when you look at the product on the field, you can say, well, you know, these guys just aren't trying hard. It's not that they're not trying hard. It's just they don't know who the fuck they are and what they're looking at. You know what I mean? Because you can give me a playbook, and we can go through the motions of being a football player. But if you used to put New York Jets on the wall and say, who are we? How many guys on that wall will write the same answer? That's a problem. You know what I mean? Like
and that's part of it. It's an identity crisis, but they're just outmatched talent-wise.
100%.
So now I don't have confidence, and I'm not as good as the guy I'm playing. It's like, What are we supposed to do?
And so I think right now that I feel bad for Darnold because I haven't met him once or twice. I know he's been to Barstool a couple of times. Sweetheart of a kid, easygoing. He's definitely a guy you want to sit down and have a beer with, fucking listen to Jack Johnson too. You know what I mean? Like, the fucking guy has everything you fucking want. But what kills you about him is that when you see him out there, you know he's against the clock. And it's just a matter of time to a catastrophic injury or to something, you know, besides fucking mono, which is fucking wild.
Chill out. Turn the page, okay?
Mark, you've been in New York for a long time. You never came up with mono. And I partied with you. So it's just fucking baffling.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. This kid could be an altar boy if it comes up with mono. Anyway, so my point is behind that, the team needs to find who they are and what they want to be. And it starts from top to bottom. And I dare say this, it starts with Woody and Chris Johnson. Is it time? The question is a fair question. Is it time to hand it over? Because right now, you can't – they've sucked for damn near a decade. I live in New Jersey. I run into Jets fans like, oh, Willie, I loved you with the Jets. You brought attitude. But I fucking threw my season tickets away. I just can't watch it. Those are the conversations I'm having as I'm trying to buy chicken thighs and fucking cereal. So for a guy who's living in the fucking muck of it, it starts – like, I own a business. When things happen in my business, it all falls on me, and I have to – I'm responsible for it. If you've been responsible for 10 years, the only claim to fame you have is from your Super Bowl and from 1969, bro. It's not good. What the fuck? Like, it's just not fucking good. So what
I'm not touching that. I still want to go to games. So
It's just not good. So when do you look in the mirror and be like, listen, maybe this isn't us. Maybe this isn't for us. Let's go fucking, I don't know. Let's go golf. Do something else. Just turn it over. Gary V, you out there? What's up?
Gary V.
Yes. Gary V, the future owner.
Would Gary take over the team and then would he let the coach give the motivational speech or would he do it? Every game.
Every game.
Like, look at me. Look at me. Are you ready? I'm ready. You know why I'm ready? Because I told myself I'm ready this morning. Did you do that? I don't know. Answer the question. You're like, whoa, dude. All right. Let's go.
I love Twitter. Yeah, I get it.
I love Gary. He's the best.
Gary V is a trip.
That's funny.
But Mark, I have some real beef with you, actually.
Oh Jesus! Here we go.
So
you have beef with him.
Let me tilt my head down. So I'm wearing what is appropriately labeled.
I thought you were
labeled.
Wearing that on your own. What is that?
I am. So
I was like,
I'm wearing
what is,
this.
What is
Mark
the hairdo?
Because I can't. Headband. Okay. It looks awful. Yeah. I thought I was going to look cool. I thought I was going to look handsome like you did back in the day, rocking this. I look terrible.
Yeah, it looks
Everyone's
awful.
Making
on you.
Fun of me. Why? Why?
No, I'm just kidding.
Do I just get the hair longer, or what is it?
So it's not so much this; it's more right.
Right where the glasses are. Yeah.
No,
it hurts.
I'm just kidding. It was a tough look for me too. Not my favorite.
No,
we gave him shit. We gave him shit for it in the locker room when he wore it. So
it was all good.
Yeah,
you're inspiring men. Okay. 15 years after it happened.
Listen, yeah, Mark Sanchez is the only guy, and I love my wife, to make my fucking wife pause when she walks out, when he walked out of the locker room. This fucking cocksucker right here is a fucking dream house. Like, trust me, he don't worry about the fucking the girls. He has them. So he could put a fucking mascot on his head and walk out. He'll still get fucking chicks. So
gross.
Yeah. Gross.
I have a question I would love to get an answer from. It's going to be a very safe question. In your time in New York, so you're
what
there.
Question?
So you were there 2009 through, what was it, 2014?
Something like that.
Okay. Throw a number on it. How many girls did you make out with? Just make out.
Make out?
Make out.
Three.
Mark, I want
to avoiding you. Mono, dude.
Right. Mark, I want to ask you this, man. What is, I think, it's not a butt fumble question because I hate asking you that. I would never ask you that. During your time with the Jets, what's the one thing you regret during your career as a Jet? And what is one thing that you don't think you get enough credit for?
Oh, geez. I honestly, the second year when we played you guys in the championship game. Well, when we played you in December, I wish we would have lost that game. Because when we went back to Pittsburgh, I don't want to say we weren't hungry, but that first half, you guys 21'd us, and it was 21-3.
You guys, so, if it was more time on the clock, you would have beat us.
On the clock, we were coming, bro.
Yeah,
our
backs were against the wall, and we felt it.
It's like too little, too late. But then we had you guys had the goal line stand. Yeah. Like, Troy was all over the damn field, and I'm like, we didn't have iPads back then, and we had freaking flip books with papers. And, dude, I remember him lining up on one side and then running over to, like, cover the flat on another side or, like, cover, like, the hook curl area, and I couldn't throw a speed out, and I had to, like, double clutch the ball and got smacked in the ear hole. And I was just like, where is this guy? Like, how do you do that? And I remember looking at the page, and he's, like, a blur on the page because they're, like, these black and white crap pictures. And I'm like, oh my God, like they can't even photograph them. And I just like crinkled the picture and threw it on the ground, like so pissed, bro. So I feel like my regret would be that I wish we would have lost the first game. And then that second game in the championship game, I wish I would have burned a timeout before halftime. Cause I want to say we still had a timeout left, but burned a timeout before halftime when I dropped back to pass and you guys got the sack fumble. Mm-hmm. To either go, I don't think it was returned for a touchdown, but it puts you guys in position to score again before halftime, because right. We needed that 10-point switch to get us back into it. We needed the, you know, 3 points before half or touchdown before half and right after half because we were getting the ball. So I honestly wish, because it crossed my mind when we got the call, I was like, we don't need to throw it here. Like, for what? Let's just run this thing. And, you know, that's probably one of my biggest regrets, because I feel like, you know, how these games go, bro. We're talking
right,
game
inches.
Of inches,
yeah.
And one play like that, you know, if we, it's almost looking back, instead of dropping back to throw, just catching the ball and falling down, right? Yeah. Would have been better.
Right.
I could have caught it and chucked it in the seventh row and looked like an asshole for a minute, but who cares if I knew the outcome, right?
Sure.
Like looking back, it's so easy, but oh, that was tough, man. That
what
was
do you
a
think,
tough loss.
So my next question is, what do you think you don't get enough credit for as a Jets quarterback?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think about it much. Honestly, I don't really worry about it. I thought we had a couple great runs. And then, you know, there's a lot of turnover after that. We played the free agency game hard, you know?
Yeah.
And it was, when you do that every year, you lose, you know, like you said, your identity, right? Because everybody's new and nobody really like knows what to do. Same thing with the business. You kind of lose the synergy, right? And so when you play that game, it makes it difficult and everything's kind of a crapshoot. It's already a crapshoot. You're already rolling the dice every year, but at least if you have the same guys rolling the dice together over and over and over, you're probably going to have a little better outcome. So after that second year, my third year, I guess maybe thinking about it now, my third year was my best year statistically. Like,
yeah.
I think I had 28 total touchdowns or 30 total touchdowns or something like that. And like more rushing touchdowns than normal, which was pretty sweet. Maybe I don't get enough credit for that. Like that was pretty cool.
I also
dunked the ball on the goalpost against the Raiders, the hot dog game. That shit was cool. I don't care what anybody says. That was cool. So it was on the back of one of the either New York Post or Daily News or something. But that one was like, I don't know if I'll ever be able to dunk again, but I did. So that was cool.
Well, I was going to say this. I think what you didn't mention, I think, and believe it or not, I think you gave a lot of the team kind of this wild young gun confidence. And I think to a lot of people, and Colin is a diehard Jets fan, and I'm allowing him to give the floor and ask you some questions as well. But I think being my first year with you, I didn't know you from, you know, I just knew of you. Obviously, we knew of each other, but I didn't know of you. But being around you, one thing I felt from your energy and who you was like, I don't know how this is going to happen, but we're going to fucking do it. And kind of that rah-rah, we can get it done together type energy was something that I felt once you left, we just didn't have. I think Fitz gave us a little bit of that, but you gave us kind of that machismo, that confidence. Like, listen, you brought the fun in fucking football, and you don't get credit for that. And I think, you know, obviously me, Nick, and Brick, we can all attest to it. Like, being out there with you, you made us smile when we were trying to kill. You know what I mean? And that's beautiful, seriously. And when New York was brutal, the fucking everything, you know, when we was winning, we were fucking the hottest thing walking around the city. When we were losing, get them out the fucking state. But you brought the fun in football, and you made a lot of us say, you know what? Football's serious. And obviously, this is how we feed our family, but we can still have fun doing it. And I felt that energy, and I've never said that to you personally, and I never thanked you. But I think New York needs to thank you, because during those run years, when it was you and LaDamian and fucking Byron and Revis and all you guys, you brought the fun in football when everybody was trying to just fucking just do it the hardest they can. Yeah. And sometimes I think as professionals, we forget that football should be fun, bro. Like it's not valid. There's some serious shit that goes on, and we put our bodies in some extreme situations, and we do it week after week, and there's a lot of shit we have to endure from a humanistic standpoint. But to sit back and go like, man, that was pretty cool. You brought that. So I think you don't get enough credit for that.
I appreciate that, man. That means a lot. Thank you. Those were some of the best memories. Like, you make a good throw and, you know, everybody's like so locked into the game, and you kind of give like an off color comment or just something to make somebody like double take, whether it's Mangold or somebody.
Right.
And, I just remember we got pressure and Nick said something after the play, like, damn, I wasn't ready for that or something. And I stepped up and like dropped his dime on tone and he toe taps, whatever. And, you know, we're in it. Right. So we're just like tunnel vision, like we're grinding. And it was almost like breaking the fourth wall or third wall or whatever it is in acting. And you like look directly into the camera and like say something. But I remember looking at Nick, I'm like, bro, I'm almost glad you missed that guy, because that was the coolest play I've ever had. When we watched that on tape, it was so sick, dude. I threw such a good ball. And I'm like describing this to him, and he's kind of looking at me like, what? Like, we're in the game still. We still have to convert a third down. And I'm like, no, I know. I just want to make sure you understand to prepare you when you do watch that play. Probably the best play of the week, just so we're clear. It's just like, what the fuck? Like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, all right, let's do it.
You need that. Colin, before we get Mark out of here, as an avid Jets fan, what do you have for him?
I just have one quick question. Obviously, huge fan. Had your poster in my bedroom growing up. I talked to Santonio Holmes a couple of weeks ago. I told him that whole era, that was the last time I was ever happy as a Jets fan. So thank you for that. But you know, the 2010 AFC divisional games against New England, that was probably one of my favorite games ever. I watched it a couple of weeks ago. It's just one of the best things ever.
I watch it every morning, actually, with the suit. I get up at 6 a.m., put on a suit and tie, and watch that game.
I've never seen Rex Ryan run down faster than when Sean Green scored that touchdown. So my one question is, though, was that hot dog worth it on the sideline? How good was that hot dog?
Dude, I hadn't eaten in hours. It didn't feel like I ate the night before because we had just been on a three-game losing streak. And I was so nervous. More nervous for that game than any playoff game for no reason. Like, it was just in my head, you know?
Because you was back home?
Well, no, this wasn't the Patriot game. This was just we were in the Titans jerseys. This was like
the Oakland game. The Oakland game. That was the slam dunk game, bro. Yeah. Come on. I thought you were a Jets fan. So
I thought you were saying it was the Patriots game.
No. Yeah. So I was more nervous for that game because we had been on this three-game skid, and we win our first three, then lose our next three, and now it's like I've experienced – the ultimate highs and the ultimate lows. And I'm just like, whoa, this is trying to find my way, right? As a rookie, and Rex did this pump up tape for me personally, like what we want. And he went to USC, not went physically, but he called over to SC, got some of my SC film and like put it on there too, as like this ramp up tape. And he showed it to me the night before the game, just me and him. And it was called, "This is what we want at quarterback," or something like that. "What we want QB." And I just was like in the zone. Like as soon as he did that, as soon as he said that, I was on. And it felt like the game was like 24 hours long, because that's how long I was like ramping up emotionally and mentally for this contest. Little did I know we're going to beat the brakes off the Raiders 38-0. Like, I mean, we kicked their ass. And I'm on the sidelines like, oh my God, I didn't really eat dinner. I definitely didn't eat today. Holy shit, I'm starving. And I'm just turn around to one of the guys in those white shirts and blue shorts who like get the ball and help out all around the stadium. And I'm like, "Bro, can you grab me some food?" And he's like, "Well, there's bars right here, like Gatorade bars." I'm like, "No, like food. Like I need like a burger, nachos, or hot dog, whatever, like anything. I'm starving." And he's like, "I mean, yeah, I could run up to concessions before they close." And I said, yeah, grab me a hot dog or something. He goes, "A hot dog?" And I said, "Yeah, hot dog." And he starts walking away. I'm like, yo, grab some mustard. Grab some mustard. The rest is history. I'm right there like trying to hide this thing. And freaking, I think it was Gumbel was on the call, and maybe Rich Gannon or somebody. But they called me out. I was like, damn, that was embarrassing. You know, it was embarrassing. And Rex was like,
"Hot dog?"
He
went up and said, "Hey, this is for Sanchez." And they said, "You're crazy. Get out of here."
I don't know. I wonder if he did pay. Although somebody poured a beer on my mom, one of the Raiders fans that game. And my brothers almost got in a huge fight, bro. They were like pissed. Yeah.
Really?
That was wild. Yes, dude. Come on, really? Raiders fans, bro.
Almost.
But still, because I'm, you know, my last name's Sanchez. So you would think they'd like maybe give me a pass. They didn't care.
They give a fuck.
My brother's like, "Mom, brutal, take his Little League pin off your shirt. Okay. We're not going to do the beer poured on you every week. Let's just go anonymous now."
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been such a fun time previewing week 3. Obviously talking about some good old times.
Well, Mark said he was able to do this. I was extremely happy. There's so many stories I want to talk about, but we'll do it offline over beers. So. You're the best, bro. You know I love you to death. And listen, I just love the way you carry yourself. You've always been a class act and a fun guy. So love you to death, bro.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
For Super Bowl champ Willie Colon,
peace.
I am Stephen Chase. See you guys next week.